Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, and welcome to episode 39 of the PreparedX Podcast. In this podcast, I interview our very own Leanne Metz. Leanne recently joined us after spending many years with Mead Johnson Nutrition, where she did some great work around business continuity and crisis management, and she'll speak a little bit about that in her introduction. We got into business continuity in this one. We spoke about some of the recent storms, and she gave her perspective on some of the key issues and some of the key concerns that she had based on these storms, as well as the other significant disasters we've had recently. I know there's been earthquakes, and flooding seems to be a big deal at the moment, certainly here in North America. We also got into the business continuity planning. We spoke about BIAs, business impact analysis, as well as, finishing off with exercises, as we always do. We like to get other people's perspective on exercises, and Leanne does a great job of that. Anyway, enough of me. Here's Leanne Metz, episode 39 of the PreparedX Podcast. Well, good morning, Leanne. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm good. I know you're on holiday today, so appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your time to do this podcast with us.
Yeah, no problem. We're here enjoying the Florida Gulf Coast and watching to make sure no additional hurricanes pop up and head our way. So
yeah, let's hope not. Hopefully we're at the end of the, or coming towards the end of the tipping point of the season anyway. So hopefully that is the case. But it's certainly a good conversation for us to have in terms of preparedness, which we will do. But before we get started, Leanne, if you could just, for the audience, just talk a little bit about your career, what you've done up until this moment in time.
Sure. For the past 30 years, I've been working at Mead Johnson Nutrition. So it's a global company that does business in about 50 countries around the world. And during my time there, I led a variety of various programs and projects across the enterprise. So used to always say I was a jack of all trades and master of none because they constantly moved me around. In reporting structure, so different functions as well as different programs. The company underwent an IPO in 2009 from Bristol Myers Squibb and became an independently traded company. And after that, they needed to develop their own business continuity program, which they asked me to develop and lead. So I started that program in 2012 and put that in place and worked on that program up until earlier this year, at which time I left the company and am now working with PreparedX, Rob and his team, to assist with exercise development and delivery, and then working with clients also for developing their BC plans. So I've grown to love the business continuity world and am looking forward to working with additional businesses so they can help be better prepared for whatever, because as we know, there are lots of things going on in the world today, and will continue to go on.
Right. Yeah. And we're really happy that you've joined us, and super excited to do some new, really interesting projects throughout the rest of 2017 and, of course, into 2018. And that leads me right into kind of the first question, really. There's been so many large-scale disasters in recent months. Obviously, we've seen a number of Category 5 storms, some fairly significant earthquakes around the world, more recently in Mexico City. And we see the the although, you know, hundreds of people dying is never a good thing, but you know, we're now seeing people living on the streets because buildings are not safe to re-enter into, and so the aftermath of these events is incredible, and obviously large scale flooding in various parts of the world, landslides. I mean, the list goes on, really. So out of the recent events, is there one in particular that stands out to you, and why would that be? Is it Hurricane Harvey? I know we've had Irma and Maria, and we've had the earthquakes in Mexico City. But is there one in particular that stands out, and why would that be?
I think for me, the one that stands out the most of these recent events, and Maria is actually still ongoing, but in the process of declining. But I think the one that stands out the most for me is Hurricane Harvey. And I think the reason for that is, it was the first major hurricane that's hit the U.S. since 2005. And so we learned a lot of lessons during Katrina, and we saw some of those come to play with Hurricane Harvey. I read the other day they're getting some of the official readings in on rainfall, and in many areas had 40 inches, but some areas had as much as 64, which
wow.
is pretty unprecedented. Yes. And if you recall, when it hit, it lasted for 4 days. So it just sat there and continued to delude with rain. And then even after it moved on somewhat, because of rivers, because of reservoirs and dams that they, that they opened and things, then the impacts continued because there were other cities and towns that were impacted days after. Because of the flooding and the movement of the water, if you will. So it was a long-lasting event with long-term effect. I saw an estimate of $70 to $200 billion in losses.
Wow.
So I'm not sure how you quantify it because, the losses were so great. But I think one of the reasons that stands out the most is because it was one of the first major events that we've had where we saw social media come into play so significantly. I was following this very closely, and there were citizens in various places. I think one was in Arizona that were keeping spreadsheets of people that she would see needing rescued on social media, either Facebook or Twitter.
Yep.
She was starting an Excel sheet, and then citizens were going to these Excel sheets and finding people who needed rescued and going to rescue them. So big social media play in that event, as well as citizens, the public came to the rescue in many, many situations with their boats and, saving people from their homes that had been flooded and things. So, it was a very different response than we've seen in the past. And I think social media was a huge component of that.
Yeah, I think there has to be a realization now, and there certainly is in those communities that have been impacted with these significant events, an appreciation that, the government is not going to be there. You have to, help yourself first in these events, and because it's just so vast, the scale of these events, that you just can't just rely on that 911 call and expect to be rescued. So you've got to have a plan yourself, be it in your family, or be it certainly within your business.
Yes, absolutely. No one's immune to these when they hit, and without a plan, you're less likely that you're going to, potentially survive, and then as a business, be able to recover. So, I'm sure there will be a lot of lessons learned from this event as well, and hopefully they'll get applied, and we'll be able to react better the next time.
Right. Yep. That leads me on to, as it relates to business continuity planning, why is it important for organizations to take that seriously?
The statistics show that about 40% of the businesses don't reopen after they've had a business interruption. And so that's a pretty significant number. And if you want to improve your odds, it's important to have a business continuity plan. And, I think there's a misconception that you need to plan for only a catastrophic event. But if you plan for a catastrophic event, there are often times where there's a smaller event, a less significant event, that you can use you know, components of the business continuity plan. It's not necessary that you always have to, you know, take every action that's on the plan, because the impact may not have been catastrophic. But I've seen that come into play several times where, you know, you can leverage some component of the plan and minimize or eliminate a disruption to your business. So, you know, it's really important for plans to understand that, you know, they always say, what, plan for the worst and hope for the best.
Yeah.
So, you know, not thinking that, well, I'm not going to do it because, you know, it's unlikely we're going to have a major catastrophe in this area, you know, overlooks the potential for, you know, a minor disruption.
Sure.
That you might be able to leverage some of your strategies in your plan. You know, it's also important for your employees to have a plan, and for your customers. So your customers, you may have customers that are relying on you for some product or service that if they had a disruption, they needed you. So as a business, you really owe it to those employees and customers. During the Irma, there was a small key lime company in the Keys, and I followed them on Twitter because they were tweeting about their business continuity plan. So it was very interesting that they had another site in somewhere near Orlando, so they were able to recover their operations there. And they talked about, you know, the importance of their employees having a source of income when they were disrupted, when the operation was disrupted in the Keys.
Yeah, that's a great story. That if a small store that can take it seriously and be up and running and be ready to go can do it, then most of us can do it. Certainly at the personal level and at the business level. I've also heard part of those stats you mentioned, the 40%. I've also heard a year after a significant event that another 25% of businesses typically would go out of business. So, those stats are pretty serious stats. So for our audience, can you describe, I guess, in general terms, what the business continuity life cycle looks like for an organization?
So I'll start at the macro level, because oftentimes that gets overlooked and people or businesses think they need a plan, which they do, but you need to start out at that macro level and understand what your program is going to look like. What are your objectives for having business continuity in place? And a model that a lot of people would be familiar with is the Plan, Do, Check, and Act. So you see this model in many of the standards, quality standards, environmental health and safety, and, you know, it also applies to business continuity. So following that model, and you can rename it if you want to rename it for your organization to fit.
Right.
So, you know, whatever works within your culture, don't try to fit your company into a mold. But this is a great model. And you can use it at both the macro level as well as when you move into the more tactical planning of a business continuity plan for a specific process.
Right.
And so you start out with plan with your, what are your program objectives? You know, why are you doing this? What are your controls? What are your processes around the program? Processes such as, how are you going to audit plans? You know, how often are you going to exercise? And very importantly, people's roles. And it's really, really critical to get that top management alignment and understanding of what their role is, both in the program as well as in recovery. So having that in place, and once you get that in place and that framework, then you move into operationalizing that. So developing your plans and, you know, implementing that. The next one is check. And I like to do and check sort of simultaneously.
Yep.
Don't wait until your plan is completely finished before you do some checks, right? Because you may waste a lot of time. You can go back and forth between those phases, if you will. And then, you know, monitoring, reviewing, and then always the continuous improvement. And then again, you can, you know, move into that same model for developing business continuity plan at that process level.
Great.
So I also like to and to talk about moving and talking about the business impact analysis, or the BIA. You can use a BIA to help you develop what that program objective should look like as well. So using the BIA methodology of what are the impacts if we can't do X
right
tomorrow,
yep.
right, if we've had a disruption, and that will help you focus your program as well. You don't use it as in-depth at the same level of depth as you do when you're moving into your processes, but at using that same methodology will help you focus your initial priorities with your program.
Yeah, I really like that strategy. Yeah, that's a good one. I guess, you know, that leads me right into, you know, the criticality of, you know, conducting that first step, that first major step, and, you know, doing that BIA. So why is it, why is it so important to get that piece right?
Well, if you don't get that right, then you could be focusing on the wrong priorities. So the way the BIA works, just generally for people who aren't familiar with it, is you look at the impact if you're unable to provide something. It could be a product, a service, or the process that supports those products and services. And so you look at the impact, and this is company specific. So what if I can't provide this product tomorrow? What is there a legal impact of it? You may have contracts with government or private sector that says you're going to provide that product. So what are the penalties if you're unable to? What's the impact on my reputation? So the company decides how they want to measure that impact. And then from that, you evaluate each of those products or services to understand what's the most critical to recover, what's the most time sensitive. If you don't have that discussion and don't have that prioritization, you could be putting resources against products or services that aren't as important to your stakeholders.
Right.
So you could be wasting money. And in addition, you should be using that methodology and priority with your disaster recovery program. So integrating that into your business continuity program so that you're defining those recovery times or RTOs for your IT systems that are aligned with your priorities helps ensure that you're not wasting money on shorter RTOs than are needed, but focusing on those critical, time-sensitive processes to deliver those priority products and services.
Right, right. So we've done the BIA, we've got the results. Now what do we do?
So the first thing you do is you need to understand what are the risks that are associated with those priorities. So I'll give an example here because I was at the outlet mall here shopping the other day, and their internet was down, which I also experienced here in July. So I'm suggesting they need a new internet provider. But if you're a retailer, you might identify, so I'm a retail store, I might identify power outage as one of the key risks to being able to sell product, right? And so you need to look at the risks that are associated with the work that helps you deliver that product or service. And understanding those risks helps you understand, you know, where to focus your efforts. And you also need to understand what do you need to be able to continue that.
Right.
So at the store the other day, one store could only take cash. They couldn't take credit cards. And in my mind, I'm wanting to ask them, why do you not have iPads there with a card reader that's running on cellular data so that you can take my credit card? So they didn't have a backup plan because how many people walk around with lots of cash these days?
Right, right. Yeah, which, you know, on a personal note, if the banking system goes down for a period of time, I guess it might be handy to have some cash laying around, again, if there's a significant event. So, but yeah, that's, you know, from a store's perspective, then, I don't think many, you know, outlets certainly, you know, are looking at this. That's big business for them. If you go down for a period of time, that could be significant for them, and it's out of their hands most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, 3 days without internet you know, in today's world of everything electronic transfers is a big deal. Yeah. So then once you understand, using that BIA data, once you understand what are your most critical processes, then you need to understand what's the minimum you can get by with. So let's stay with the retail example. So how many checkouts can I get by with on a regular day? Do I need 10 iPads or do I need two? You know, how many, what's the minimum number that I could get by with in the event that my internet is out?
Yeah.
So understanding that and then understanding, you know, how you're going to do that. So those are the steps that you go through, understanding your processes, what are your minimum requirements, and then what are your equipment needs that are associated with those minimum requirements. And having those discussions up front helps facilitate that recovery when that internet does go down.
Sure, sure.
Yes.
Could you touch... Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say that there are multiple strategies that can be employed. And typically when you're talking to those people that are in the process, because you really, that's who you need to talk to. They're the experts, you know, in their job. They know what they need. And it's likely they have workarounds in place that they have that you don't even know about. So oftentimes we find that, and then my counsel is always get it out of your head and on paper, right? So a lot of times you'll find out options just by talking to them and then weighing those options and understanding the pros and cons of them in order to select your strategy, and those feed right into your plan.
Right. Yep. So could you touch on small to mid-sized businesses for a moment? We hear about vendors and other partners often supporting larger organizations. You know, why is it imperative for those, you know, smaller to mid-sized organizations to be as prepared, or if not more prepared, than the ones that they support?
Well, typically in a smaller organization, it's more likely they're going to have single points of failure, one store, or one employee with some type of authorization, that if that employee leaves or is unable to perform their job, they don't have a backup for. So they're operating on fewer resources. So it's more important probably for them than it is for a large corporation who may have, you know, corporate to bail them out if they get in trouble. Or they might be able to borrow resources from another, you know, location or organization within their corporation. So probably more important for a small business. Having those plans in place will help them look for those single points of failure and remediate those in advance, potentially, instead of waiting until there is a disruption. You know, having the discussions, like I said, getting down and talking to the people who do the job, you will learn a lot. Because they may tell you, you know, this machine, it's the only one we have, and every day I have to, you know, do whatever to make it work. So you may decide to replace that piece of equipment, you know, earlier versus later.
Sure.
So very important, right, for small businesses to do that. There's a great story that a coworker told me about where he was at the Grand Canyon. And the point of this is that your plans don't have to be complex. And they don't have to be elaborate. You don't have to spend a lot of money to be able to be resilient. So he and this friend of mine and his wife were out at the Grand Canyon and were going to stay at a hotel that was just off of the rim. And so they drove and they kept driving and driving. And she said, I think you've gone too far. And he kept driving. So finally they realized they went back. And the reason that they didn't see the hotel, and it was a very small town, was that there was a power outage. So the entire town was black and dark, didn't see it, drove right through it.
Huh.
So they went to the hotel, and my friend goes to the desk, and he said, you know, I guess you can't check us in. And the hotel owner said, yes, I can check you in. I have a small generator that runs my computer, so I can check you in. And my friend said, can we get in our room? Because the door locks are usually, you know, with a key card, an electric. And he said, there's a battery backup in the door. Okay, good. And the owner of the hotel said, and I also have box dinner with a sandwich, chips, and water. They're available in the lobby where we have a fireplace so you can see. And here are your glow sticks. to help you get to your room. So you break the glow stick and it lasts for 24 hours. And I love that story because it demonstrates that you don't have to spend a lot of money. You don't have to invest a lot in, you know, resilience, but, you know, thinking of some alternate ways to provide what you needed will help you in those times when there are outages. And so my friend who had actually been through my business continuity training said, "Oh, do you have a business continuity plan?" And the hotel owner said, "Why, yes, I do," and pulled it out. He had it under the desk and said, "We actually tested it a month ago. We found some gaps. And so, you know, we think we've remediated those. So how do you think we're doing?" So, you know, very impressive little bitty hotel near the Grand Canyon that had a business continuity plan and, you know, continued to provide services to the guests. So,
and of course,
I love that story.
Yeah. And of course, that story will be told time and time again. And, you know, that, you know, your friend or your associate at the time will share that story and say, "Yeah, you know, that, this is the place to go." And people will hear about that story and they'll go there and know that they are safe in the knowledge that their services will be provided no matter what happens.
Yes, for sure.
The final question, of course, at PreparedX, we you know, we're really focused on, you know, delivering these exercises at all levels: business continuity, as you know, crisis management, you know, emergency management. But my question for you is: out of all the exercises that you've been a part of, what's the one thing that you remember as being a big learning for everyone involved? And I'm sure there's, in every session, as we know, there is always big learnings. But, you know, what was the one thing for you that stood out and why?
One thing that stood out for me was there was an assumption within a specific department that everyone would work from home if they were unable to be in the facility. And this could be whether there's a problem with the facility itself or there's a weather-related issue and people can't go to the facility. And so their strategy was that everyone was going to work from home. When asked if they had tested it, they had not. And so they decided that they should, and they found gaps across the board with employees' ability and comfort with using, you know, mainly technology. So there were employees that had not used external flash drives, for example, and didn't know how to use that and access the data that was on there. They didn't know how to use the VPN. And, you know, just a number of things that they struggled with. This was a call center, so they also had some call routing software that were on their laptops. And so I think that this is a common misconception that that companies think, "Oh, we'll just work from home."
Right.
But not understanding the implications of it. And there's also some questions about some of the legalities of that and the employer's you know, duty of care if someone's working in their home and they are injured, et cetera, et cetera. So I think work from home is a strategy that, you know, we as a practice need to think more about and understand better before it just, you know, automatically becomes a strategy in a BCP.
Great. Excellent, excellent. And I'm sure that there are many other stories like that that come out of these exercises. There certainly is when we conduct them. Leanne, thank you very much for your time and taking time out of your very important break down there in Florida. This was an excellent episode.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. And, you know, look forward to helping some more businesses become better prepared.
Yeah, just any final comments for our listeners, or, you know, can they get a hold of you, email, or can they follow you social media wise?
Sure, absolutely. So I can be reached. I'm on Twitter at Leanne_Metz. I'm also on LinkedIn, and my email is Leanne.Metz@PreparedX.com.
Excellent, excellent. Thanks again for your time today, and enjoy the rest of your holiday.
Thank you, Rob.
Bye. Well, that's it for the podcast for this week. I hope you enjoyed Leanne's time. That was a fantastic podcast, and if you did enjoy it, please go to iTunes or the other places where you're hearing and downloading this recording, and please rate us. That's really important for us, and provide that feedback. Again, thank you for your time today, and we look forward to hearing from you soon. Take care.